how is it possible that the most powerful people on Wikipedia, which is itself the most powerful media property in some ways, how is it possible that they could be anonymous, that wield so much power and take no real world responsibility at all? And that actually has legal consequences even. You know, they can commit libel essentially and get away with it.
You're listening to The Corbett Report.
Welcome back, friends. Welcome back to The Corbett Report. James Corbett here, coming at you in July of 2026. And if you are the sort of person who follows these types of things, you may have heard about something called Wiki Project Intellectual Diversity, which is a group that is aiming to help restore Wikipedia's original firm commitment to intellectual diversity by doing such things as promoting fair decision-making, genuine neutrality, transparent governance, and responsiveness to the public. Who could disagree with those principles? Well, the Wikipedia editors could disagree, of course. So it will probably come as little surprise to people in my audience, at any rate, that the person behind this Wiki Project Intellectual Diversity has been indefinitely blocked from editing on Wikipedia. But it may be surprising even to Corbett Report viewers in the audience. You might even be surprised to learn the identity of this person, namely Larry Sanger, the co-founder of Wikipedia. Yes, as one recent memorable headline put it, the co-founder of Wikipedia has been blocked from editing the site after he campaigned to make it more balanced. You can't make this stuff up. It is a crazy story, but don't take it from me. Let's take it from the man himself. Larry Sanger, thank you very much for joining us today on The Corbett Report.
No problem. I'm looking forward to the conversation.
So am I. And as I say, this is a crazy story, perhaps not to be not unexpected given Wikipedia's unfortunate history. But in order to understand this story, I think we probably have to set the table for this conversation and find out a little bit about yourself and your background with Wikipedia. I know I will direct people to your book, Essays on Free Knowledge, The Origins of Wikipedia and the New Politics of Knowledge, which you have right there behind you. I hope people have read it, but for the benefit of those who haven't read that yet, can you tell us a little bit about how you came to co-found Wikipedia?
So the short story is that I knew Jimmy Wales from the mid-1990s when we were both graduate students, and me in philosophy, he in finance, and he ran this Ayn Rand study group, and I ran a more general group about just philosophy, systematic philosophy, and we joined each other's groups and actually met offline. After several years, like I sort of dropped out of just a lot of, you know, any interest in Ayn Rand, which was, you know, what Jimmy's book, well, his group was devoted to. And nevertheless, he was interested in finding somebody to start a new encyclopedia project, and he called it Newpedia. He was looking for a philosopher in particular. So I was actually hired to start a new encyclopedia for his startup. And this very cool project, right? To fall in my lap. But it was a year into the development of Newpedia, essentially, that a friend told me about wikis. And it occurred to me that the problem that we had with recruiting people and getting people to work for free on an encyclopedia would be solved by, perhaps anyway, by a wiki. But the people with Newpedia wanted to have nothing to do with Wikipedia, with a wiki at all. So it wasn't even called Wikipedia yet. Because they rejected the idea of a Newpedia wiki, we started Wikipedia. That was my name for it. And I wrote a lot of the initial policy and so forth, which guided the site for many years, actually. In the end, though, after another year and change, I was let go because basically the funding for Wikipedia collapsed along with the collapse of the dot-com boom, basically. So then a year after that, so now we're talking about the beginning of 2002, I was sort of disgusted with the direction that Wikipedia was going. It was expanding enormously, which was, you know, gratifying, but it was being dominated by people that we back in the 1990s would have called trolls. Jimmy Wales seemed to be uninterested in doing anything about that problem, and denied even that it was a problem. Whatever. So I washed my hands of Wikipedia long, long ago. I could have stuck with it. I'm rather glad that I didn't. I would have been ousted much sooner if I had, I suppose. So that's
maybe to your credit, given what Wikipedia has become. But let's talk about some of those original principles that you had a part in shaping of this Wikipedia project. So ideas and ideals like neutrality, no original research, be bold, verifiability, etc. These are core tenets of the Wikipedia idea that you helped to develop. Talk about that process.
Sure. So the neutrality policy actually began life with Newpedia. And the whole idea is if in a given article, there are a number of positions that cannot represent anyone as being that of the article writers. You can't use Wiki Voice, as it's called, to express one point of view on controversial issues. That's the fundamental idea of neutrality. It really has nothing to do with objective truth. It has to do with whether you can recognize that one controversial view is being presented over others. That actually had excellent support, I would say, in the first 5 years or so of Wikipedia. Now, some of the others actually, like the verifiability policy, I can't take credit for that one, and I don't think it is, in all respects, an excellent policy. There are issues with it. I think that certainly it's a good thing that facts be backed up with evidence, which is essentially what the policy requires. But I think that a lot of times there are a lot of unnecessary footnotes for the very simple reason that people get into disputes and then they use a footnote to resolve the dispute. And then, of course, they use debate over what sources may be used in order to basically shut up people who would favor the point of view of one of the sources. So there's a number of others. Yes, be bold. That was something that came from the original requirements of a new website that nobody had heard of before, that, you know, people required some encouragement to get involved in. There's a certain kind of person that didn't need much encouragement. All you had to do is tell them, you can edit this page right now, which we did. We put in the header of the site, and they went to town. But there's a lot of people who have very useful things to add to encyclopedia articles, but they need a little encouragement, including a lot of academics. It's like, be like a little worried about touching other people's words, and perhaps rightly so. So,
well, you know, you raise an interesting point, because maybe it's the sort of the self-selecting nature of the people who are very keen to engage in something like this may actually contribute to some of the problems that we've seen over the years. The fundamental problems of the Wikipedia project and what it has become will not be any news to my regular listeners. I have been vociferously opposed to what Wikipedia has become for decades now here on the Corbett Report. Yes. So it's kind of ironic that I'm sitting here talking to the co-founder, but perhaps our concerns overlap in a number of respects. I am an unorthodox thinker who doesn't swallow the official government narrative about 9/11, or who challenges anthropogenic global warming as the existential crisis that we're all facing, etc. Obviously, views that are completely verboten on Wikipedia at this point and dismissed as conspiracy theory. So right. I would like to hear your perspective on where you think Wikipedia has taken a wrong turn and how it can be corrected.
Well, there's a lot to unpack there. I mean, first, let's talk about what the turn was, just characterize how Wikipedia changed. So I would say that from its founding until about maybe 2006 or so, when it really began to enter the public eye, it had a countercultural bent, or rather, it would be better to say that it was very tolerant of countercultural thinking. And that was directly a result of the neutrality policy. And so it was important to everyone that Wikipedia not take a stand on controversial issues. And it was only through just repeated over the years pushes by ideologues, essentially, propagandists, who knows who they are, because they're anonymous, ultimately, that the institutional support for neutrality just sort of went by the wayside. And what took its place, again, I would say between about 2005, 2006, and the following 5 or 10 years, is just a complete reversal, so that far from being countercultural, Wikipedia became essentially the voice piece of the establishment. So yeah, I remember observing, I forget where, around 2012, that the voice of Wikipedia resembled that of like the BBC or the New York Times, and the positions taken were also very similar. So I was myself wringing my hands already that Wikipedia was taking definite stands, but it wasn't as radical as it would become, you know, 10 years after that. I would say around the time of Trump's election and Brexit, so about 2016, just when the mainstream media, it made its massive pivot to Fox News and MSNBC style opinion journalism, which was very noticeable at the time, at least it was to me, Wikipedia essentially did the same thing and started stating all sorts of, not just selectively emphasizing views, which was what, say, the BBC would have done in 2010, but explicitly declaring that certain views are wrong, putting labels on them, which it never would have done. That would be enough to get you kicked out of the project in the early days, you know, like in 2004 or something like that. If you were to say that a standing president telling lies, for example, repeatedly in your prose, you know, if you didn't back down from that practice, then you probably would have been blocked. And now it's quite the opposite. If you defend Trump, you're going to be blocked pretty quickly. So that's the nature of the change, essentially. If anything that appears to be an establishment position, that is pretty predictably going to be what is in Wikipedia. So you can imagine what it says about COVID, just for example.
I don't have to imagine, because unfortunately I have seen such things. But yes, for anyone out there who does not know, they should, of course, venture into anything that even whiffs of politically controversial subject matter, and they will very soon see the tenor of Wikipedia. But as I say, my audience probably understands that already. I want to get into how that change has taken place and the types of rules and behavior that has codified that in Wikipedia by this point. But before we get into that, you raise an interesting point. You locate 2006 or so is when Wikipedia really landed in the public consciousness. I can pinpoint exactly when it landed in my consciousness, because in 2005, I was working as a fact checker in a publishing office in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. And we were using Encarta as a source for our fact checking. That was one of the reliable, allowable sources for our fact checking. And it was at that exact time that suddenly every search that you do for anything online, the number one link would be Wikipedia. Every single time. And it was at that exact moment. And I was literally staring at this revolution happening. I was literally forced to use Encarta, but here's this new Wikipedia project that has suddenly everywhere, which was at the same time, marvelous, amazing. It was obviously revolutionary, but at the same time, there was some worry in my mind about how did this suddenly launch to absolutely the number one search result on absolutely every Google search. Of course, at the time where Google was basically 100% of searches being done, how did this essential monopoly arise? To my mind, that can't happen organically. Do you know about how the type of relationship that Wikipedia had with Google in order to ensure that?
Well, I can tell you what it was like from the inside. So we observed that Google's crawler, as it was called, because it happens like once a month, it would come by. We would actually see in the logs that Google's crawler appeared and recrawled the site. All the new pages then were indexed in Google, and you could actually see them. You know, before a certain date, you'd do a search on an article that you'd been working on, wouldn't be in Google. The next day, it was there. Okay. And a lot of new traffic came from people searching on those topics. So it is entirely possible, I think fairly likely, in fact, that Google was putting their thumb on the scales and giving extra weight to Wikipedia in the early days. The case can be made, though, if you actually at the time did similar searches. They're really, for many topics, for the long tail of topics covered by Wikipedia, there wasn't anything like an encyclopedia article on a topic other than Wikipedia. Now, I think that has changed for most topics. Even fairly deep into the catalog, there are alternate encyclopedia articles. But back then, there really were none. So that in itself, I think, explains a fair bit. That doesn't require a conspiracy. The fact, however, we were on the, well, it's funny that I was just doing some cleanup. My son was doing some cleanup and found this old briefcase, still dusty, which has copies that I saved of some of the original articles. And I swear I did not like get this out for this interview or anything. But this is the circuit section of the New York Times, September 20th, 2001. All right. September 20th. I mean, Wikipedia had only been around for like 9 months. And, well, that's me right there. And so there's a fairly big, long article. And here's Jimmy Wales. Fairly big, long feature article. It's on the second page of the section, but nevertheless is very substantive, just explaining the news about how it worked and so forth. So we were on the radar of outlets like the New York Times and MIT's Tech Review, which at the time was like really, again, an establishment organ for tech news. I think that there is a chance. The reason why we were boosted in by Google was simply that they liked what we were doing, and perhaps the people behind Google perhaps saw something that they theoretically could control. The neat thing about Wikipedia from the point of view of propagandists is that it's anonymous. That's like the really important thing. The fact that you can't tell who is sharing the information.
This is exactly where my mind goes, because it's the perfect intelligence laundering device for those types of organizations, three-letter organizations that would love to get information out there in a third-party format. You have not allayed my suspicions that there was a thumb on the scale. You have only enforced them because, yes, after 9 months and the Wikipedia project was still basically a baby in the crib and was being featured in the New York Times. I don't think my website was being featured in the New York Times after 9 months. Maybe not as groundbreaking, but still. Anyway.
We had taken off. Like, by then, I think we already had like 10,000 articles or something like that. Or they were mostly stub articles, right? Very short. Nevertheless, it was something. It was a phenomenon. I think it's very clear. So, you know.
Well, it struck me as a revolution that was happening. And yes, that was palpable and tangible, and that you could be a part of, which of course is part of the allure. But we've already broached some of the fundamental problems that obviously have corrupted or at least driven Wikipedia along its path. For example, the anonymous nature of the editors. We've talked about the verifiable sources, yes, of course, but which sources are allowed and which are disallowed. There are many mechanisms that seem reasonable at first glance, but on deeper inspection can be used to steer Wikipedia in a certain direction. Let's talk about some of those problems and how they have steered Wikipedia over the years.
Sure. I think the most important one is the reliable sources policy itself in general. And again, it was not this way in the early days. Some of these rules were not introduced until like 2005, 2006, when things really started changing a lot in terms of the policy. You're discouraged from using primary sources. And the reason for that is that if you use a primary source, then you're going to be giving your own interpretation of that, which sounds like original research. So that's the thinking behind it. And an encyclopedia article is not supposed to have original research. Now, I think that's a misinterpretation of those policies. And what it means is there's all kinds of information in primary sources that will never be seen in Wikipedia, apparently, which actually gives a huge opening by the way, to Grokopedia or any other encyclopedia that is willing to cover the primary sources. But a more serious problem, especially since 2010, and then it was really codified around 2017, is on a subpage of the reliable sources page, policy page. It's called reliable sources / perennial sources. And this has a list of literally hundreds, I think it must be over 1,000 different sources from all around the world on many different topics, mostly news sources, but other kinds of sources as well. And they're all color-coded in terms of how open Wikipedia is to using them. So the green lit ones include things like the New York Times and even Mother Jones. And the BBC, Die Welt and Le Monde, these sorts of things. The establishment organs can be used. Then there are ones that are yellow, which means use with caution. Prefer another source if another green lit one is available. But if information is in one of those yellow sources and can't be found in other sources, then generally speaking, maybe if it is properly attributed, then it can be used. And there's a number that are like that. I think Reason Magazine, if it isn't green lit, then it's yellow. Something like National Review would go there. Any number of others. Then there's three different tiers of verboten sources, and they basically none of them can be used for almost any purposes. They have gradations of contempt that they have for these other sources. So this is where Fox News standard hard news reporting falls. It's basically cannot be used. New York Post definitely cannot be used. The Daily Mail definitely out. In fact, the only thing that is conventionally called conservative that can be used would be the Wall Street Journal. Well, the editorial page is a slightly conservative, I suppose, or libertarian, maybe. The Telegraph in the UK, which, again, both of those are very, very establishment. They are strongly respective of the Overton window that is defined by the establishment left. That basically means that if a fact is being covered only in the alt media or in conservative news sources, then it can't be used. It can't be found. Rather, that fact cannot be found in Wikipedia.
Hunter Biden's laptop does not exist until it's reported on by the New York Times, right?
Pretty much. That's right. Wasn't allowed. It's really something. And of course, that's something that it directly flies in the face of some things that I said quite explicitly early on, you know, that you shouldn't choose sources based in order to push a particular point of view. And that's called POV pushing. Wikipedia begs to differ now, and they have changed their view on that. So there's a lot of other problems that are related to other policies.
Well, rather than approaching this from the perspective of the problems, perhaps it's more constructive to approach it from the perspective of the solutions or the potential solutions. And on that note, I will note that just as Martin Luther, just as Martin Luther obviously launched the Reformation with his nailing of the 95 Theses to the church door. Yeah. You have launched your Reformation with the nailing of the 9 Theses to the internet store, as it were, as in the 9 Theses essay that you have produced on 9 points that you want to make with regards to how Wikipedia can change, improve, go back to its original roots, etc. Let's talk about your 9 Theses and where they come from.
Sure. So if you go to LarrySanger.org, one of the big boxes toward the top of the page has a link to the 9 Theses on Wikipedia. And the main page is fairly readable. It's like a long op-ed. But for each of those, there is a corresponding essay, well-researched. Took me a long time to write. The whole thing, if you were to print it out, would be, you know, a short book length, something like 130 pages or something. Basically, in it, I say that Wikipedia needs to return to some of its fundamental original policies. And in some cases, it isn't so much that there needs to be a return, but that the very nature of the policy was problematic in the first place. In the case of the first thesis, just for example, I have it like this: end decision making by consensus. So the idea is that when there is a controversy, then what happens is somebody makes a proposal about how the article should read, what position it should take, whatever, on the talk page of the article. And a number of different positions are supplied. And then people sort of line up underneath. And it seems democratic to a certain extent. From the outside, if you didn't know what was really going on, it would seem democratic. At some usually unspecified time, like generally it's supposed to be when the discussion is dwindling, when it's dying down, then somebody steps in and closes the discussion, right? And the closer simply declares what the consensus of the group is. Now, this is supposed to be decision-making by consensus, but there never was a sense of the word consensus in which such a thing was properly called a consensus. That is simply a majority position.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't this invoked in your banning?
In what?
The consensus? Wasn't this principle invoked in your banning? It was the consensus.
It was, but it was not used in the same way, right? So even back in 2001, when we first started working on Wikipedia, the reason that we talked about consensus at all is that in the original wiki culture that predated Wikipedia itself, the way that the controversies were settled was by a consensus statement about all of the different positions that appeared in a discussion, all right? And then what was discussion mode became documentation mode, all right? And the documentation of the discussion had to represent a consensus position in the sense that everyone recognized that their view was respected, okay? That is not how it works at all anymore, right? And for a while, that's actually how the neutrality policy worked. You can find early statements by Jimmy Wales saying the purpose of the neutrality policy is to enable, it's like has a social purpose. It's to enable people with wildly different points of view to work together and ensure that their views are all respected. But now what it simply means is one person is usually an administrator or somebody who has a lot of edits and understands the process very well and understands sort of like the mood of the community and so forth. They simply go in and they sort of bossily declare what the consensus is. And everybody else who isn't in the consensus has to shut up after that. Like, we may not talk. And at some future date, who knows, maybe 6 months, maybe a couple of years, a previously litigated issue can be relitigated. Yeah. So my proposal is simply that this making decisions by consensus, or at least, as I said, calling it a consensus, has to end. It's just wrong to insult the people who are left out of the consensus, to insult them by saying that, well, they're not part of the consensus, that it's a consensus at all. I mean, that implies that they agree. What if I don't agree? So, and there's a number of other points in the nine theses.
Every one of them. We will direct people to larrysanger.org where they can read the entire essay. But I would like to focus for a moment on number two, because it actually brilliantly addresses a sort of philosophical concern that I have when people talk about neutrality, because of course, neutrality, we should strive for neutrality. But as you put it in point number two, enable competing articles, neutrality is impossible to practice if editors refuse to compromise. I would just end it at neutrality is impossible to practice, period, because it strikes me that absolutely any article on almost any subject you can imagine would eventually devolve into some people say X, some people say not X, and then there are other people who say X is a total distraction and we should be talking about C, man, or something like that. And it would devolve into essentially a useless tool at that point. But the idea of enabling competing articles, I think, is a nice solution to that. Tell us about that idea.
So the idea is that, yes, if editors refuse to compromise and Wikipedia is now led by uncompromising editors, then we can, theoretically at least, designate other competing, as I call them, frameworks that that could be used to write articles from. So what if I want to take a conservative Christian framework and say what they think about the topic of Yahweh, which is, you know, the name of the God of the Bible, right? It seems like some really important information has been left out if an article that would please such people, even if they're trying to aim at neutrality within their framework, if their information is essentially left out, which it is in Wikipedia's article on Yahweh, it represents a skeptical view. So that's very interesting. It takes, in fact, a globalist, academic, secular, and progressive view. And if you put that together, globalist, academic, secular, progressive, GASP is the acronym. That just represents one favored perspective, one framework. So I think there's no reason why we can't have a number of competing articles all on the same, named the same. So just imagine what it would be like to have 10 different competing articles about Donald Trump, for example. You can have the ordinary Wikipedia view, which is going to represent more or less the Democratic Party at this point. Let's be honest. It'd be interesting to see what the Republican Party would have.
Your point number 7, let the public rate articles. And then we have a system where, yes, there might be competing articles on a given subject, but some will be rated more highly, and so people will gravitate towards them, but they don't have to. They can look at the other less rated articles, etc. I think it's a self-solving, it's a system that seems to solve one of the core problems of this whole project.
Yes. I mean, right now, there is very little accountability to the general public. Take it or leave it is the Wikipedia attitude now. In 2013, there was an experiment in which the public were allowed to rate articles, but the ratings only could be seen on the talk pages. And so it wasn't really, the ratings weren't for the public, they were for the editors. But it's actually the public that need to see the ratings. And there needs to be not just that. I think there needs to be a discussion forum which is open to the general public. What Wikipedia will say is, oh, well, if you want to discuss the article, go ahead. That's what the talk page is for. But of course, that's nonsense, because now the Wikipedia administrators will shut you down if you do not respect the very persnickety rule set of Wikipedia. If you violate their rules in any way and you are a new person, you will be out on your ear right away. It should not work that way. You should be able to talk back to Wikipedia, and you're not allowed. I mean, what the hell? Why can't I talk back to Wikipedia?
Might be the tagline for Wikipedia at this point. And speaking of which, point number 8, end indefinite blocking seems particularly ironic given what has happened to you. And of course, I will include a link to the discussion. MSGJ has indefinitely blocked Larry Sanger, and you can read through all of that discussion if you are so inclined. But tell us from your perspective, what happened recently to get you blocked from editing Wikipedia?
Right. Well, after advancing these 9 theses last October, for the next several months, I sort of laid low. I was hoping that others would take up the mantle. I engaged a little bit on Wikipedia, and I did a lot of interviews, hoping to drive some traffic to Wikipedia in the form of new types of contributors. And in the end, as part of my work on the Knowledge Standards Foundation, which is my nonprofit, I decided this year to spearhead a reform movement that would put a lot of the 9 theses in a suitably broad form. So we didn't explicitly favor the particular solutions, but simply agreed about what the problems were, to create a big tent. So I started something on Wikipedia, at least on my user space, called Wiki Project Intellectual Diversity. And it's just like it sounds. You might think, oh, that this is just a front group for religious conservatives, something like that. It's not really true. There were a lot of people from a lot of different perspectives in that group. I encouraged people, Hindus and, you know, Israelis and many different kinds, to join. So finally, we had enough people, almost 30 people had declared their support. And it looked like there was enough support to be approved for the Wiki project, as it's called, to be approved by the administration of Wikipedia, essentially. There's a special Wiki Project Council, right? So when that happened, overnight, there was suddenly this hullabaloo. I didn't realize that anyone cared that much about Wiki Project Intellectual Diversity. For the previous 2 months, I had been developing this project, and there was almost no comment at all. It's like they were saving all of their firepower for when I actually made the application. And when I did, I found myself actually, first of all, outnumbered. And the word had gone out to a number of the most popular policy discussion pages on Wikipedia. So there were dozens and dozens of people bad-mouthing me and bad-mouthing the project. And then somebody observed that that I had promoted Wiki Project Intellectual Diversity on social media. And to which I said, well, of course that's allowed. I mean, you're encouraged to recruit people for your Wiki projects. And it doesn't say you may recruit only within Wikipedia. Why wouldn't I be able to recruit people from outside of Wikipedia? And around about the same time, so this would have been the morning of Thursday, I think it was about the 18th. Yes, the 18th of June. The next day, by the afternoon, I had been taken up at ANI, which is the Administrator's Notice Board Incidents page, because I had mentioned on an ex post to the same people that I had, tried to recruit, there's a there's a controversy now going on. That was sort of a bemused post. I didn't say, go and support me. I knew that would be wrong. That would be a canvassing. But the fact that I had mentioned it at all, even though if anybody else had done it for any other group, that wouldn't be canvassing for sure, right? It'd just be, oh, okay, we're debating this now. For that, I was brought up on charges of canvassing. And then the whole administrator class, as near as I can tell, possibly 200 people. I haven't counted them yet, but it's definitely over 100 administrators descended and read me out a litany of all of the complaints that they'd ever had about me. Now, there was a focus on a few things. One of my biggest complaints, one of the biggest complaints against me, was the fact that I was defending myself too much. I was responding. I made an FAQ in which I responded to all of the objections to Wiki Project Intellectual Diversity. I put it up there as, you know, my response. And they didn't like that at all. That was, I forget what the word is. Anyway, they have these things called essays, which are supposed to be interpretations of the rules, but being essays, they're not official. They're officially unofficial, but unofficially, they are official. unofficially, they have the they're taken as law. Really, what's going on though? What was going on is it was. And this has happened a thousand times, thousands and thousands of times before me. It doesn't matter what the rules say precisely. All that really matters is if there are enough people on one particular side. And, you know, if you if they don't like you, then you're out, period. It doesn't really matter what the rules say. There was no...
Nor all rules, as someone sagely advised many years ago.
I came up with that. I'm sorry. I regret that. Anyway, let's see. There were a few other complaints. I defended myself and at length, and I was told, wait a minute, you can't defend yourself. Some people actually came out and said that. Others said, well, you can defend yourself, but not at such great length. You know, I'm not going to read that wall of text. Well, okay. So what this means is ultimately this is nothing like a proper process, right? This is what it is objectively describable as, is a disciplinary process, but a proper disciplinary process. It doesn't matter who it is, really should be according to something like due process. Now, there's due process can mean different things according to like who's involved. That's fine, right? Doesn't have to have all the same rules, but like one of the things that has to be different is it can't be the case that just anybody can show up and start bad-mouthing you without any consequences. Right, there seems to be something wrong with that one at least, right? But on Wikipedia, there is no distinction between the prosecution and the judges. Your prosecutors are your judges. There is no official party that declares what the charges against you. In fact, I was told a number of times there are no charges, right? So. Like it's
simply you get.
yes, it's an amorphous blob, and yeah. They're proud of it, right?
You know, we should really thank you for demonstrating this process in such a public way, so that people understand what's really going on under the hood. And as I say, I will link up the page, the Wikipedia administrator's notice board page, with the whole lengthy discussion if people want to read through it for themselves. But it just demonstrates this crazy Kafka-esque process that's a trial but not a trial with charges, but there are no charges when you can't defend yourself, or at least not so much, etc.
Right. And you don't know that the, you don't know who your judge is. You don't know who you're talking. Well, they're all your judges. There will, however, be somebody who does this very low key administrator task of declaring what the consensus is at the end. Except it's not a low key. That guy is your judge, as a matter of fact. Right. He is supposed to, or she is supposed to, represent the consensus, or you know, but it, such people have been known to contradict a very large proportion of, even sometimes the majority of the participants, and in this case, that wasn't going to happen because they were perfectly aligned. Just as a little interesting twist of fate, the following Monday, when I was blocked twice, you see, early in the day on Monday the 22nd. Let's see here. Just double check my facts here. Yes. So on Monday, the 22nd, the Monday after the Friday when it all blew up. So 3 days later, I had flown out to New York City to, as it were, to accept an award. And what was the award for? Founding Wikipedia and standing up for it, for the very reform movement that we've been talking about. And so 2 hours after I was finally blocked the second time on that day, I received the award. And so I told the whole story, in an abbreviated form to the people who gave me the award, Tablet Magazine. So that was kind of funny. I've been chuckling ever since, really. I mean,
it is ironic, but okay. So maybe the cynicism has finally corroded down to the bottom of my soul here, but call me cynical, but it seems that obviously this whole sham trial, whatever this is, inquisition that has blocked you, it was never about what you did or didn't do, or what you said or didn't say, or how you defended yourself, or if you didn't defend yourself, because you had committed the ultimate thought crime on Wikipedia, which is you respected the one type of diversity that Wikipedia editors hate, which is intellectual diversity. And as a result, the conclusion was foreordained. And I think, again, let's boil this down to brass tacks. The purpose of a system is what it does. So regardless of whatever your intentions were in setting up Wikipedia, it is this now. It is this type of system in which, obviously, it certainly does benefit certain mysterious, shadowy establishment-promoting entities who do not have to reveal their identity. And I feel it would be naive at this point to think that Wikipedia can be reformed from within. But I'm grasping for some sort of bright spot in all of this. Perhaps you can pull me out of my cynicism here.
I don't think that Wikipedia can be reformed from within in the way that I was trying to do it. If I can't do it, I'm not sure anyone could. I don't even think that Jimmy Wales would be allowed to do the sort of thing that I was trying to do. The administrator class, they love their prerogatives and they will jealously guard them even against the founders. And I wasn't one of the things that I was trying to do, in fact, was to make it a requirement that the most powerful people in Wikipedia, possibly all administrators, but I would have settled for a subset of the most powerful administrators, they should not be able to be anonymous. It's like, how is it possible that the most powerful people on Wikipedia, which is itself the most powerful media property in some ways, apart from, you know, maybe search engines and LLMs now, how is it possible that they could be anonymous, that wield so much power and take no real world responsibility at all? And that actually has legal consequences even. You know, they can commit libel essentially and get away with it. I'm sorry, what was the question here?
Well, the question is, okay, so, well, you've answered it in a sense. If it can't be reformed from within, then where do we go from here? What is the answer going forward?
I think actually pressure from outside is ultimately going to be necessary. So one thing that I've been toying with the idea, and I've said this before, I may well be pulling the trigger on it soon, is to make a sort of wrapper website using the resources of the Encyclosphere, which is the collection of all the encyclopedias, something that I've been working on for several years at the Knowledge Standards Foundation, and basically allow the public, beginning with LLMs, actually, to rate articles and to comment on articles. So to create the comment section that Wikipedia is missing. And it seems to me that this is going to be fairly popular. There's no reason why it shouldn't be, because there's a lot of people who have a lot of beefs against Wikipedia. There's a lot of very distinguished people who have Wikipedia profiles that have had to weigh in on Wikipedia and say, you know, you've misrepresented the facts about my career. And they have been told to their face, well, you know, if this story hasn't appeared in secondary sources that are reliable sources, then sorry, we can't help you. And, you know, even though they're dealing with the source himself who is complaining about an inaccuracy, and when the whole process, I mean, they already do have interminable discussions about how, you know, what facts are acceptable in the encyclopedia. And so why wouldn't they make that sort of determination? If there's enough people anyway weighing in publicly, and one thing that a colleague and I have started working on is a letter of complaint. I'm not really sure what we'll call it exactly, that will be signed by a lot of very distinguished people. Just for example, because he's still at the top of my mind, I heard from Peter Schiff several months back, basically complaining about his treatment on Wikipedia, and he was, yeah, I won't tell his story, but let's just say there's a lot of people, like, you know, one of the most famous investment advisors in the world, lots and lots of politicians, any number of other people, and not just in the United States too, are surely going to be willing to sign a letter. And it's some the sort of thing that I would expect Wikipedia to ignore, but we can make things hot enough for them that they won't be able to ignore it, right? And I'll tell you this, I can only imagine what Wikipedians are saying about especially the administrator class will be saying in response to this. You know, they'll be howling in protest themselves. How dare Sanger go outside of the community and try to interfere with our pristine, pure process? Which is it's absolute nonsense.
Well, they won't be allowed to cite this interview, though, because I will state quite proudly that a Corbett Report listener did create a page for me many years ago, and it was removed because I am not a notable person in the eyes of the Wikipedia editors, which actually I'm perfectly happy with, because it means I'm not under the eye of Sauron and they can't libel me with their smears. At any rate.
Yes, that's good. It's good as far as I'm concerned. I would be just as happy not having an article on Wikipedia myself. Right.
They will be howling in protest at you.
Yes.
Talk about this. Yes.
And I think they will. I do think that there is a chance, though, that pressure can be brought, perhaps, by Congress. I think that the Section 230 guarantees that they have against liability has been abused for too long. I think that real damage has been done to reputations. A lot of injustice has been done, and I mean that perfectly sincerely. I'm not just saying that. One of the reasons why I have taken up this project, this reform project, is, you know, it was impressed upon me that I bear some responsibility for the damage that has been done to reputations by Wikipedia just by getting it started. And if I can actually do something about it, then I should. So that's my motivation anyway. And I'm not done. So,
well, excellent. That's what I want to hear. At least things are some people are trying something. And I never in a million years would have imagined, after 2 decades of being so vocal in my opposition to Wikipedia, that I'd be sitting here talking to the co-founder of Wikipedia. But we share a lot of complaints about where Wikipedia has ended up. It's really interesting to hear about. As I say, I will link up, of course, all of the things we've talked about today, especially, of course, LarrySanger.org, where they can read those 9 theses. And I'll link up the Wiki Project Intellectual Diversity. But tell us about Encyclosphere and the Knowledge Standards Foundation and how people can follow your work.
So you can go to Encyclosphere, just like it sounds, encyclo, like the first part of encyclopedia, plus the word sphere.org. Mostly what I have been doing is this reform project for the last 18 months or so. Basically, we're still looking for major support for other developers. I have been able to support my son, as it happens, who is a very good programmer, better than me, and is responsible for encyclosearch.org, which is a meta search engine plus, and it's not just a search engine, it's also an archive. So there are local copies of over 30 articles and a lot of metadata for, not 30 articles, 30 encyclopedias, and metadata about 30 more, which are free to read. I had an idea very briefly the project is to allow people to document what books they have read, and in particular to put them in order of what I would read first and what I would read second. So I don't think anyone has ever done this before, but the idea is if I read, say, Aristotle's Nicomachean Ethics, it would be a good idea to read certain dialogues of Socrates and Plato first. So what I want to do is to create the database and the user interface that allows people to work together share their ideas about what's worth reading and what should be read before what else. So it's not just another book review project, but it would be a project to put the books in order for educational purposes. It shouldn't be long before we launch that, actually. So that'll be nice. There's another thing that I'm working on called Seminarium Theologico Philosophicum, which is a a seminar about philosophy of religion. Last month, I've sort of had to put it on hold because of all of this business. But I'm going to get back to it soon. We've been reading Aristotle's Physics, in fact, right now in the middle of his prime mover argument. So I have taught philosophy of religion before 20 years ago, so I'm getting back into that online. And, you know, there's a lot of pastors and you know, Bible study leaders and so forth involved, just trying to help with the philosophical education of mostly Christians, which I think is badly needed. So that's what I've been doing with myself. And another good place for people to follow me would be on X. I do hold forth on X a fair bit. And it's L. Sanger is my handle.
I will link that up in the show notes as well, of course, at CorbettReport.com. I hope people will make use of those show notes. I don't know about everyone else, but personally, whatever happens with Wikipedia and whatever way it goes, I'm more interested in Encyclosphere and ideas like that. So I think perhaps something to displace the Wikipedia monopoly would be welcome at this point. At any rate, Larry Sanger, we've already talked for over an hour, and we could probably talk for many more hours. I think we'll wrap up the conversation at this point, but hopefully we can have you on again in the future for updates about how your various projects are going. Thank you very much for taking the time to talk with us today.
Absolutely. Happy to do it.
Media. It surrounds us. We live our lives in it and through it. We structure our lives around it. But it wasn't always this way. So how did we get here? And where is the media technology that increasingly governs our lives taking us? The Media Matrix. Watch the documentary for free at CorbettReport.com/media or purchase a copy on DVD at NewWorldNextWeek.com.